actually.
We are live in person, ladies and gentlemen.
This is crazy. So if the audio sounds a little bit distant or whatever, have mercy on us for this week. We're gonna bust all these out, and it's so exciting. This is the first time making podcast history.
Yeah, I can't believe that we've not actually done this in person. I think initially we talked about maybe doing this in person.
Yeah.
And then it just hasn't happened that way, but here we are, yeah. Do you ever see Lady and the Tramp?
Yes, I have children, and I'm a child before.
Uh-huh. You've been a child before?
I have.
Yeah, yeah. I can't help but think of that scene, that famous spaghetti scene as we...
We're sharing a mic. Hopefully my breath doesn't smell that bad right now. But anyways, Out of the Silent Planet, chapter 15. And I was telling you how this is the first time it hit me how far we've come in this book and in this journey with Ransom. It just dawned on me. I was like, man, we've gone through a lot in such a rapid pace.
Yeah, no, we literally find ourselves on a different planet in situations that we could have never even imagined. Highs, lows, I mean, times of clarity and times of chaos and panic. And Ransom has had a heck of a time. I mean, all this has happened. If you think about it, this has all happened over the period of a few months.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe half of a year.
Maybe
something like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness gracious!
So we start where we last left off, right? We have Ransom. He climbed the mountain. He turned around. No, that's a Fleetwood Mac song. He climbs the mountain, and he finally meets a Sorn face to face. And the first thing I love, and this is the voice. I don't know. This is the voice that I heard whenever I read this very first quote of the Sorn saying, "Come in, small one." Like, that's the voice that I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking like a very large, because the Sorn is large.
Sure.
But a very large, like a Sasquatch, but very taller and thinner.
Right. That is not what I imagined at all.
What voice did you hear in your head?
You know what? Like a cross between James Earl Jones and Liam Neeson, I think, is kind of what I was imagining.
So you picked the two baddest voices that have ever existed.
Well, and I don't know if my C.S. Lewis bias is coming through.
Maybe
and that's why
Freeman,
the voice of Aslan, maybe that's what's coming through. But no, but this opening line of "come in, small one," that is a very Aslan thing to say.
Yeah.
You know? And that's totally, or Mufasa kind of like though that's where my head was at, you know, like having this like deep, you know, authoritative, strong, you know, voice saying like, "Come in, small one," you know?
So real quick though, when I read this, I stopped about halfway through and I was thinking, so
you didn't read the whole thing? You just kind
of
stopped halfway?
Yeah. I was like, I got the gist of it.
I'll carry us. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. No. So
I do that every other week. So anyway, go ahead.
Guilty. No. I stopped halfway because the language that's being spoken, right? I had to stop and go, wait. They're probably not speaking English. They're probably speaking the same language as the Haras, but they never explicitly say that. Or I didn't see it.
Yeah, no, they're for sure not speaking English.
Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know why, like, because you're reading English. So you're just...
That's right.
And it starts right off with a conversation.
Uh-huh.
And Ransom's talking, and you're thinking, oh, we're having a conversation. And then I was like, wait a minute. No. They're still speaking... Do we know what this language is called?
The Haras language. I don't know what the name of it is, but it is the language that the Haras taught him.
Okay.
I mean, I think we clearly see how adept he's become at this language, though.
Yes.
Which is incredible.
Yes.
Which is why, you know, maybe he has spent more time on this planet than we realize.
True.
You know? I mean, again, I don't think it's been a year or anything like that, but maybe half a year, maybe. Because I think, if I remember correctly, the travel time to get to the planet was about a month.
Right.
And then, so since then, maybe it's been 3 or 4 more months.
Yeah, I would say probably closer to 4.
Yeah. So we're almost at about half a year. So in that time, I mean, he's been, completely immersed in this culture.
Right.
You know, and I'm just, it's amazing to see that he's able to have dialogue and communication in this foreign language, and to the level to where we're not even like, it doesn't say things like he was frustrated in finding his words or anything like that. At least at this point, it doesn't say anything like that. I think maybe later on it says something towards that.
Yeah, I forgot which part that was, but yeah, it's near the end. But so he begins the conversation with this Sorn. They go back and forth. The Sorn quickly says, oh, well, you're definitely not from this planet because you're so small and fat, basically. Because, you know, you must have came from the silent planet, not this planet, and definitely not the other planet, which was interesting. So now he's talking about another planet, mm-hmm. because if you came from that planet, well, then you would be like a desk, basically.
Right, right, because the gravitational pull, I guess, there would be even stronger. And so
Perlandra?
Well, no, there were two. The one he's talking about... Glundandra.
Glundandra.
And that if you even were to stand up, you would break just because that pool was so tough. And then, of course, the other planet, Perlandra, is a planet where there's a lot of heat. And so you wouldn't even come close to being able to survive here like because Venus. It's so much cold. Yes, it's so much colder here.
Yeah.
So you must, do you see just the logical process here that mm-hmm. the Sorn is using? Like you must come from this planet. Like we're just Solacandra. Using process of elimination, you know, before we get to that point though, I like the resolve of Ransom here. He talks about how he had no idea what was coming next, but he was determined to carry out his program. Like, so there was no, before we would see Ransom looking for a quick out mm-hmm. or looking for an escape plan and thinking, okay, what happens if the worst happens? Here we see a Ransom who's resolved to, you know, carry through what his mission is. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what happens next, I'm going to do this. And so this fear that he was maybe expecting to have when he encountered a Sorn is, he calls it a surprising indifference, that it's not really a fear at all at this point. So I just think, like, already we're seeing, like, this is a different Ransom.
Yeah.
You can almost look at it as, like, pre-Hanakra kill and post-Hanakra kill, you know?
I was going to say PH and PH, but that didn't work. So, yeah, but, and you see that, too, when the Sorn gets up real quickly to fetch something. He internally flinches, but he makes sure not to show his fear, like you were saying that moment. So that's what made me think of. But my favorite part is he goes and grabs something, the Sorn that is, and the Sorn turns to Ransom and he says, "Smell on this."
Yeah. Like, I underlined that also. That's a great line. You know, have you ever been to an oxygen bar?
No.
Okay, so like. Ah, man, years and years ago, I went with a group of friends. We went to Las Vegas.
Correction. I have been to an oxygen bar. It's called Outside. But anyways, go ahead.
It's so silly. Anyway, so I went to Vegas with a group of friends, and I was like 19 years old. You know what a 19-year-old can do in Vegas?
Go on.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It was horrible. So we ended up, I don't know, what did we do? We went to a taxi, we caught a taxi and we're like, okay, what can we do? Is there a mall around here? You know? So he literally took us out of the strip area into like downtown area, Vegas, where people live.
Right.
And, took us to a mall and we found people our age and asked like, what is there to do? And somehow we heard of this club or bar that people our age hung out at, and it was an oxygen bar. So we went, because what else is there to do? And this is ridiculous. Like, literally, like, you walk up to the bar, and I guess you pick out a fragrance or something that is connected to your oxygen, so it has a pleasant smell, and then you put on a little bit of this, like, gas mask.
I was going to ask, like, did they put it up your nose, or did you have, like, a mask?
No, like, a little bit of a mask, you know, and you like, breathe it in. Like, you're taking a hit of oxygen. It's, I mean, genius from a money-making perspective. Because what are you breathing if not oxygen? And it's not as if we're at a super high elevation to where it's like absolutely necessary, like in the case here of Ransom.
Or in the bottom of an ocean.
Goodness, where, yeah, where you need it to live. It was, anyway, so this is absolutely a case where the oxygen is much needed and, as you can see, much appreciated. We get a brand new Ransom once he gets a breath of fresh air here, you know?
And he asks the question, are you Augre? And the Soin answers yes. So we found Augre. We found the one that Haras had said to go find.
Yep.
Which is awesome. And then they do their pleasantries. They're introducing each other. You know, Ransom's trying to explain who he is as a man. And then this is also where Ransom starts giving descriptions of Hongre, or excuse me, Augre. And Augre is, he's not the most pleasant pleasant to look at, we'll say, to be PC. as it says here, you know, grotesquely suggestive of huge ears and the head down between them rested its chin on the protruding breast. So his legs are so large that where he's sitting in this cave, the way I was understanding was if the Sorn was a regular sized human, he would be sitting Indian style.
I took it as like
his knees upright.
Yeah. Like he's sitting with his knees curled up, like pulled in.
Yeah.
Almost like with his arms around his knees, like how you see people do. But instead of resting his chin on the knees, his legs are so long.
It's past his head.
That the knees come past his head. And instead, apparently his chest protrudes out. And that's where he's resting his head, which is kind of odd. I was trying to imagine this a little bit more. And a little bit later on, he talks about how it looks like Augre's wearing some kind of like a thin, translucent type of clothing.
Yeah.
And it turns out that it's feathers.
It's I love that part because he's like, it kind of looks like feathers.
No, that actually is feathers. Yeah, no. So I was thinking about, you know, like a bird or some birds anyway have like a thick chest or a breast that comes out further past its head.
Right.
And I wonder if that's kind of what we're talking about here with a Sorn, where it has not just a flat chest, but kind of like a breastbone that protrudes in a similar type of way. And that's what he's resting his head on. I have no idea. I mean, obviously, this is crazy.
I honestly, to God, started thinking about Big Bird. I don't know if you did or not. Just the really tall feather.
Really tall feather, creepy looking
thing. And as Ransom says here, you know, a new conception of the Sorns began to arise in his mind. The ideas of a giant and ghost-like figure, you know, recedes. And now new words are coming in as goblin and gawk. Interesting.
Yeah, gawk is the one that made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So as we move forward here, he offers him food, he eats food, and then one of the foods this is so funny. he offers to Ransom, it looks kind of like it's cheese.
Uh-huh.
And so Ransom asks what it is, and the Sorn, like, it's so funny because if you were to give someone cheese who had no idea what cheese was,
right?
Like, how would you explain it? You probably would go maybe something similar to like, well, you know, there's these cows and there's milk and there's a process and it firms. So the Sorn goes through the process of describing how to make cheese, and which is what Ransom suspected it to be to begin with. And Ransom just like, once he starts going forward with it, Ransom like cuts him off and it's like, yes, we do the same thing. I got it. And I just love the description here. Just the snippet here. The Sorn began to explain painfully how the female of some animal secreted a fluid for the nourishment of its young. And then of course it says it would have gone on had Ransom not interrupted.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah. We do the same on Earth. What's the beast use? Like what kind of cheese? Let's get more to the specifics. And it's that, if you remember, when he was wandering around aimlessly, when he first ran away from Weston and Divine after that initial encounter with Ahnakra and Sorns when they first landed on the planet,
right.
He saw these like really large, tall, giraffe-like creatures that were eating the tops of the trees. And it's this yellow beast with the long neck that the cheese comes from. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the Sorns are like a shepherd to herders. These animals. They're herders, yeah. Which brings Ransom some peace until he remembers that that's what Cyclops was.
in what was it, the Odyssey?
The Odyssey, yeah.
Yeah, with Homer.
Mm-hmm.
So then they go on, and of course, it can't be a chapter of C.S. Lewis if you don't bring any type of philosophy in. And so that's where we're moving into now, where after talking about cheese and eating, they've had a pleasant meal, they start talking about rules and Oriosa, and how Ransom's talking about how this is my mission and who he is. And it's interesting because, it's funny because they use the same language, meaning this is the same common native tongue for the planet. So obviously we're hearing some of the exact same words that we heard from the Haras, that is being exactly the same way with the Sorn, which I thought was really interesting, where, you know, the part where they talk about the Eldils and the Sorn, just, you know, just like the Haras, were like, that must be so interesting that you don't have those in your planet. Like, exactly the same wording. But then, of course, I would be remiss, as we spoke about in previous chapters, where we knew the minute he would talk to a Sorn, the Sorn would be like, oh, those stupid Haras, all they care about is art and poetry, yes, and everything else. They, yes, don't know anything.
Yeah, I thought exactly that was hilarious.
We talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, and getting to the language thing, it was interesting when they talked about how Oyarsa was not a Sorn, because you know, he asks, hey, so is Oyarsa a Sorn? Are you in charge of the Haras, of the Harasa? And they're like, no, Oyarsa rules them. Well, then who rules you? Well, Oyarsa, yeah. So then is he a Sorn? And he's like, no, no, I've told you, he rules all now. And so that word Hanau, which is like a being, that we heard from the cross, it's the same word, but they dropped the H.
Yeah,
they
mentioned so that the
chapter.
The H, yeah,
must be something that's unique to the cross and the way that they pronounce and speak the language.
Yeah.
Like almost like dialect.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point. So, I didn't think about that.
So same language, but slight changes here, mm-hmm, and there, mm-hmm, depending on species or region or what have you. But no, yeah, so we get this description here of Oyarsa that he's not a Sorn, and he doesn't die, he doesn't breed, he's like an Eldil, but he's actually the greatest of the Eldilla, so mm-hmm, that's plural, right? Yep. And of course the surprise that there's no Eldilla where Ransom comes from.
The interesting thing now, moving into what I was saying earlier about the philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. And he's trying to, again, to meaning the Sorn, he's trying to explain Oriosa. And basically, and this is what's, for me, you know, I'm not a huge philosophy person, but what little I do know, and specifically within physics, mm-hmm, was unbelievable. I was floored when I read this part about the Sorn talking about the difference between when light hits our eyes to where the sound hits our ears and our physical touch and to see, you know, to see, to hear, all these different things, right? And basically, the way I read it and understand, basically, C.S. Lewis is talking about the theory of relativity, of Einstein, of like, okay, if you've got two trains passing at the same time and you have a lightning bolt that hits at the middle, and I'm probably butchering this, so if there's any philosophers, I apologize, but basically, if you have two people on the same train platform and they're seeing the exact same thing happening at the exact same moment, they're going to have two very different outlooks. They're going to say, well, no, the train passed at this point with the lightning bolt hitting at this angle, and this is how we saw it. But both are correct because at their place and time and what they're seeing, what they're hearing, what they're experiencing. So it was, I was just floored because I remember reading about all of this just a year or two ago in my schoolwork. And I was like, oh my gosh, this was written, you know, decades before Einstein is really, you know, in physics and everything else. So anyways, it was just really cool.
Yeah. The complete different perspective that, Oyarsa or the Eldilla have. I thought that was really interesting. Just how they move so fast that they are in more than one place at once.
Right.
But not because of omnipresence, but because of the speed with which they move. And he says, is like, if movement is faster than that which moves, is more nearly in two places at once. And then if it goes even faster still, it would seem like you would be in all places at once. And right. So there's this speed with which they move, and just how, like you're talking about, how we see light as, well, we don't. We see the effects of light is what we see, and they see light as similar to the way we see water, mm-hmm. like something to right. dive into and to move about in.
And speaking of which, I think that was the thing that Ransom he didn't know how to communicate as far as mm-hmm. water being gas, a liquid, and a solid, as far right. as H2O.
Different forms.
Right. And that's where he was losing the communication.
Right. That. And that was the little bit of a wake up, like, oh, wow, yeah, this is not English. He's yeah. translating on the fly. Yeah. Uh-huh. So yeah, no. So just the different perspective there, that light for him is like water that he pours through it, or that and this was interesting, that the like, walls and rocks are like a cloud because of the speed with which he moves. Mm. He passes through them. It looks yeah. like he's passing through something solid, but to him, he's passing through a mist. And I thought of like the Flash or like Superman. Yeah. You know, when they they're so fast, they like phase through solid objects because of the speed with which they're moving.
Right.
And like in a similar, not at all way, this Eldilla are moving through objects. And again, it's not that, wow, how did they pass through something solid? It's not even solid for them because they're moving so quickly. It's almost like it's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, no, it's interesting. It's interesting the flip of the perspective there, like what you're talking about, that how they interact and how they are with this world that we see, our perspective.
So, you know, for the sake of time, we're going to kind of push forward to sort of the big climactic part of the chapter here, which is... after their discussion about all this, Ransom says, well, we don't have an Oriosa in our world. And I keep wanting to say the Sorn, but I want to say the Sorn's name. So
Ogre,
thank you. So Ogre says, well, that's proof right there that you come from the silent planet, the Lacandra, like, because they're, you know, there's a million miles away, and that's just proof. And Ransom's like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm telling you, it's not our planet. He said, well, I've got a way to show you. So they climb up inside, as Ransom's describing, basically inside the mountain, going up near the peak. Mm-hmm. He's almost dead at this point, trying to keep up with the Sorn and trying to keep up even with that smell, that shot of oxygen. And he gets to the top, and I like the part where he's like, I probably should tell him like how we use telescopes on our planet. and then sure enough, basically that's what they have up there. So he looks through, and at first he sees like, oh, there's a planet, and it has some ice caps on the bottom. And wait a minute, is that Europe? Is that part of North America? That is Earth. But the other funny thing about it, Gabe,
mm-hmm.
what was so interesting about the planet?
Oh, that it was upside down.
Yeah.
Yeah. That when he was looking at it, he noticed Northern Europe and Northern America, but in the southern section, I guess, yeah, upside down, he was seeing it. And it's kind of talking about perspectives, mm-hmm. you know, like, so who's upside down here, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. What's north? What's south? What's our reality? It's definitely changes things. Once he realizes this is Earth, this is where he's like overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my gosh, there in that little disc, is London, Athens, Jerusalem, Shakespeare.
Shakespeare, I love that.
And then he goes, my backpack, you know, like that's still lying on a porch of an empty house, you know. And then he finally admits, yes, he said dully to the Sorn, that is my world. And the line here is, it was the bleakest moment in all his travels.
Yeah. I would definitely concur with that. I would feel that way. Like, because like you said, you spent the last 4 months kind of, I'm sure in his mind, like, I'm just adjusting. This is my new home. This is my new life. It's almost make-believe. Like, because it does feel unreal. Like, you're in a spaceship and you're going out of the planet and now you're landing in this new planet. Like, all of this is so hard to comprehend. But now, for the first time, he's getting smacked in the face with it after 4 months of living on this planet, on Melisandre, and realizing, I'm not home.
Yeah, and not only am I not home, that's my home.
Yeah.
And it's so different from where I am right now. Like, everything that it carries with it, the imperfections, the sins that man has, the atrocities, all the stuff that I imagine he didn't want to talk about with the Hrasa when they were asking him questions. He's owning all of it in that moment. And that, yes, that's my planet. He's not running from it. He's saying, yeah, I'm from there and that planet belongs to me and I belong to it.
Right. But I wonder if he's also, because I know this is my first time reading it, so I'm just speculating here, I wonder if he's also in a way taking a moment and saying, do I want that to be my home? Or do I want this to be my new home? Do I really want to go back? Like, yes, I miss it because it's home. We always miss home. But am I willing to let that go? Because I realize how bad it is there. Because like you said, he was talking about, like, he was so afraid to talk about all the ills and the bad things. And he's seeing, like, oh, this place is better. Now, we're only halfway through this book and we got two more books. And so,
not only is it better, he's better.
Yeah.
Like, he's becoming, you know, the best version of himself here on this planet. He's the whole be all that you can be. That's what Ransom's doing. He's becoming a man. He's finding strength. He's growing in virtue. He's not being this shell of a person who deflects from conflict, but someone who stands firm and resolute. And this is helping him to become the very best of himself. So yeah, and I can understand wanting to stay in that environment.
Oh. Well, I think that'll do it for this one. I really don't have any wild guesses right now, just because we're kind of at a midway point, I feel.
Uh-huh.
And there's not enough. The only thing that we know is, okay, he's still going after Oriosa. Like, that's his mission. And I feel like, I think that's, my prediction is, the cliffhanger of this book, this first book, is he's going to meet Oriosa at the end of this book.
Real quick, how do you say that word?
Oriosa?
Like Oreos?
Sure.
It's just awesome. I really appreciate
Oriosa?
Listening to you.
Oriosa?
I hope, listener, that you are having as much fun listening to Jason as I am.
I hope you're laughing as much as Gabe is at me right now.
And go enjoy some Oreos.
I'm just subliminally trying to tell you, go get a pack of Oreos.
Uh-huh, right. Anyway, I can't wait to see what's next. He's on his journey towards Maladil. To see Oyarsa and to I guess find out why he's being summoned.
Because he mentions that, like, why am I being summoned? Mm-hmm. And the Sorn's like, I don't know, he didn't tell me.
Yeah, exactly. So to see why he's been summoned and to see what's going to happen with Weston and Divine, and is he ever going to see the Hrasa again? Is he destined to stay on this planet? Yeah, so many unanswered questions, still so much left to see and do. So yeah, thanks for hanging out with us, and keep hanging with us.
I promise, listeners, next episode, next chapter, I will make some crazy bold predictions no matter what. Even if I get nothing in the next chapter, I will make crazy predictions.
You hear him. Jason's hold promising double stuff size
Oreosis
predictions. Oreosis size predictions.
Oh, man. Well, that'll do it. Thank you all so much for listening. You can check out our website, readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. That's where you can catch up and, you know, leave comments. Let us know what you think of not just this chapter of this book. Join the conversation. We'd love to hear from y'all. And
do us a favor right now when you're listening to it, kind of just glance over to your phone and you might see these little pictures, these little things called stars, and just push the one that's the fifth one. It takes
farthest
like
right.
2 seconds. It's the one on the farthest right. And, you know, just knock that out. That way other people have a better chance of finding us. But yeah, absolutely. Thank you for listening and for your time. And